The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. And coming up on the show, we should have quite a treat. We do have quite a treat. A fellow who was first in our area in 1993 when he was a winner of the Stravinsky Awards competition that used to be hosted every other year by the University of Illinois. It was an international competition and turned out to be quite the career starter for Adam Neiman, who is now back to perform 17 years later, I think, 19 years later, with the University, the Illinois Symphony Orchestra concerts in Bloomington and Springfield this weekend. First up on the show, though, we have students from Oakwood High School who are putting on a production called Hamlet Thrillmageddon. We'll have an excerpt coming up shortly on Live and Local. That is the main title from The Return of Godzilla, music by, I can't even pronounce this fellow's name, Reijiro Koroku or something like that, and this off of a collection of The Best of Godzilla. That by way of introduction to Hamlet Thrillmageddon, which is a production that will be presented this week by students at Oakwood High School, the drama department there. It opens tonight, and then tomorrow and Saturday as well, 7 o'clock performances in the high school's cafeteria. Brianna Whittem is a special education teacher there and is also the director of the drama program.
Yes.
And has brought along a number of students to give us a scene in a few minutes. Tell me how and why you decided to do Hamlet Thrillmageddon. It's hard to say.
It is hard to spit out. The author is Don Zelaitis, and a couple of years ago we did one of Don Zelaitis' more well-known works called Brothers Grimm Spectaculathon, and that was quite a hit.
There seems
at our school.
To be a theme going on here.
Right. His humor is right on for our high school age, and it's very relevant humor. So it just seemed fitting that for some of our seniors that wanted a send-off piece for the spring production of their senior year, we wanted to pick a comedy, and Hamlet Thrillmageddon fit the bill.
So it sounds like this fellow, anyway, has a theme of distorting classics. And are you suggesting when you say that, you know, it's right for high school students that students don't take their classics seriously?
Not at all. I wouldn't say that he butchers them too much. The story is still
butcher?
Intact.
Did I say butcher?
No, you didn't say butcher.
Okay, all right.
But the story is still intact. The references are just changed. So actually I see it kind of as a benefit for the other students who are not seniors yet. They read Hamlet their senior year, and now they're familiar with the storyline before they have to try to interpret Shakespeare on their
own. At least they're familiar with a version of the storyline. Because you have characters of Hamlet, Claudius, Gertrude, that's fine. But then you have Jesse and Chip. And
they're the narrators of the show.
Oh, they're the narrators. Oh, okay. So how many of you are seniors? So you've read Hamlet already?
No.
No, you haven't read Hamlet.
The honors class reads Hamlet.
So you didn't, Ms. Whittem, you didn't make an assignment to these students to read Hamlet?
No, we did not do an assignment to read Hamlet.
In their preparation? It's not that difficult. You could probably do it before your first performance tonight.
Note the silence.
They're thrilled with the notion of... Okay, so we have Cassie Jenkins, who is Hamlet, and you haven't read Hamlet.
No, I haven't.
What do you know about Hamlet?
Just overall the plot lines of it.
Okay, the Cliff Notes version. Do they still have Cliff Notes?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I've used those in strategic situations before. Brianna Hargrove is Claudius. and Beth Wombles as Gertrude. I'm actually forgetting who Gertrude is.
That is the king's wife.
The king's wife, okay, right.
Well, the new...
Claudius being the king. So you are not the only female playing a male character in this production, I gather.
That would be her playing the male
character.
That would
be you, right, you're Claudius, yeah. Is there just a shortage of boys at your school who do drama?
Yeah, there's
only two.
And you haven't been able to convert any, apparently.
I'm newly converted. This is my first year in drama. So.
Oh, really? Well, okay. Somebody's got to start everywhere. And then Kendra Kinzer?
Yes.
In the role of Jesse, one of the narrators, and Lacey Clark as Chip. So what's the premise here? Why is it not just straight Hamlet? Any of you can jump
The idea in. Of this show is that it was written to show that the high school's theater budget had been very reduced to $4 and a pair of used socks.
Yeah.
So the option they are left with is to either put on a great low production or low cost show or sell out and get corporate sponsors and do product placement throughout the play.
And I'm guessing I know which direction they went.
There you go. You got it. They sold out. And so the scene that we're going to listen to here in just a little bit is the very first scene, and it will be a product placement for a GlaxoSmithKline product for pharmacological adjustment.
Well, we might as well hear it. It comes from Hamlet Thrillmageddon, which is opening tonight at Oakwood High School.
And now,
the moment you have all been waiting for.
Dr. Pepper presents Disney's Hamlet.
Live from the Gatorade Theater.
Sponsored by the good people at Tuck's Medicated Pads.
Hamlet, Act 1.
Brought to you by GlaxoSmithKline, improving your life through pharmaceuticals since 1954.
It was a dark and stormy night, and inside Dr. Pepper Castle, the new king was talking to his subjects.
My royal subjects, I know there have been some difficult times out there lately. We're all hurting after my brother's death. But this is a time for this nation to come together. Let's be honest, we all liked him. He had a great beard. I was always envious of that beard. Not so envious that I would kill, let's put that rumor to bed. Read my lips. I did not have murderous relations with my brother. I'm glad we have put that issue to rest, and I hope that those of you who are saying those things enjoy your time being tortured.
Bah!
Now, I'm not here to talk about my personal life. I mean, life. But, again, people have been talking. So yes, I have married Gertrude. And some of you sickos out there think it's a little strange that I married my brother's wife 2 days after he died. But you should all be ashamed of yourselves, and you will also be tortured.
My people, I loved my dead husband very much, which is why I married his brother. They kind of look similar. I know there's an ew factor out there, but we'll all get over it. And now, to take your mind off of that, bunnies, thank you.
Bravo, mother. Bravo.
Hamlet, how good to see you out of your room.
What's the good news, son?
You'll never be my father!
Whoa, chill out.
No! I hate you! I hate my old family! I hope you all die!
Whoa, let's put the brakes on this. I think Hamlet needs some pharmacological adjustments.
And the good people at GlaxoSmithKline can help.
You see, Hamlet is suffering from teenage rebellion syndrome. Some symptoms include
wearing black clothing,
clever wordplay,
long soliloquies,
tendency to make death threats,
and sleeping.
It's more common than you might think.
Especially if your father is murdered, then the murderer remarries your mother, then your father's ghost comes back from the underworld and enlists you to get revenge.
Especially then.
But just because your teenager is going through a difficult emotional state, that doesn't mean you have to endure these outbursts.
Because the good people at GlaxoSmithKline has just developed a new drug that can be used in situations like this. It's called Refixer.
Refixer.
What does Refixer do? Well,
it fixes everything. That's why it's called Refixor.
But to be more specific about it, Refixer enters the bloodstream and attacks the parts of the brain that cause suspicion, anger, and whininess. It attaches itself to those emotions and savagely eliminates them, like a big dog chewing on a carcass of a dead squirrel.
Sweet!
Your teenager will no longer be the out-of-control, black clothing-wearing, drain on your resources since they've been the age of 13. Instead, well, maybe it's just easier to show you. Let's watch the scene again, but this time, Hamlet has taken a double dose of Refixer.
My people, I loved my dead husband very much, which is why I married his brother. They kind of look similar. I know there's an ew factor out there, but we'll all get over it. And now, to take your mind off of that, bunnies, thank you.
Good job, Mom!
Thanks, son.
High five, new dad.
Oh, Hamlet, you're such a boon to me in my old age.
You're not that old.
I know, I know.
Wow, you guys are so in love.
I'll say.
I'm so glad that my mom was able to move on with her life after my dad died so mysteriously from that poison. It's a good thing I don't have any suspicions.
And scene.
That was so sweet.
Indeed it was. Now your teenager will no longer question your indiscretions or moral failings.
Wow!
Refixer.
But you should know that Refixer does have certain side effects.
Weight gain, depression, insanity, numbness of finger and toes, a tendency to soliloquize, and in rare cases, seeing ghosts.
And remember to ask your doctor.
So my question is the rest of the play under the influence of Refixer?
No, just that one scene.
Just that one scene.
We have other sponsors, like we have a scene brought to you by Disney. Another scene is brought to you by Carnival Cruise Lines and Beaches Family Resorts.
Gatorade and Nike.
Well, of course, Nike has to be in there somewhere. And do you have various kinds of product placements throughout the play as well?
Yes.
In the props and so on. This scene comes to you sponsored by WYLL Radio, which is not a commercial station, ironically. From Hamlet Thrillmageddon, which will be at Oakwood High School, starting tonight, three shows, 7 o'clock each. And we heard in the role of Hamlet, in both versions of Hamlet, Cassie Jenkins and Claudius was Brianna Hargrove, Gertrude Beth Wombles. And then as the narrators, Jesse and Chip, Kendra Kinzer and Lacey Clark, respectively, and Lacey seems to particularly enjoy this notion of all of these product placements. Is there, how many shows do you do a year?
We do two shows a year, usually.
And always straight plays or sometimes musicals? Or?
Since I have taken over as director, we have not done a musical yet. We've done just plays.
And how long has that been?
This is my third year.
Do you not like musicals?
I love musicals. I just don't have enough piano talent to direct them.
How did you get? Did you get nominated to lead the drama program, or when you were hired?
I asked for it.
You asked for it.
Yes. When I was hired, I asked them if I could also be involved with drama club, and they said you can be more than involved. You can direct it.
And does that mean that they were desperate, or you actually have dramatic background?
I had some dramatic background, yes. In college, I was a technician for Braden Auditorium at Illinois State University.
Oh, really? Well, that's pretty good. That's a pretty big place with lots of things going on.
Sure.
Are all of the aspects of the shows done by students, meaning all the technical things as well as the acting?
Yes. And really, the actors do most of the technical work themselves also, painting, hanging lights, running sound cords, all of that.
So our Hamlet, Cassie, have you been in shows before?
Yes, I have. I've done it for a couple years now.
And is this your biggest role so far?
No, I've had a couple other large roles.
Did you do you consider yourself at all typecast in this particular role? I mean, I don't know if you dressed the occasion today, but you got the black hair, you got the black T-shirt, you got the black thing around your, everything's black except for your jeans.
No, this is how I actually look. I just somehow fit the part of Hamlet.
And have you tried Refixer yourself?
No, I haven't, but I'm not interested in it. I like how I am.
So you are a poster child for for self-respect and so on, and however it is that you may come across. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well then, good. So you seem to be a good fit for that particular role. And others of you have played? I know, see, Brianna, you said you were, this is your first year.
Yes, this is my first show.
And your first show?
Yes.
Do you have to try out to get these spots, or do you join the, is it a club? Is that what it's called at school, like a drama club?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We auditioned for roles, but everybody got a role.
How big's the club?
There are like eight of us.
Oh, really? Total?
Yeah.
Eight or ten? And so you have, I imagine you probably must have some double casting that goes on.
Yeah.
Double casting meaning not the usual sense of two people playing one role, but one person playing multiple roles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yes. I think Beth here, who is reading as Gertrude today, she has the one of the longest lists. She is quadruple cast in this play. Beth, so what are your roles?
I am Laertes, Player King, Female Villager, Herald,
and that's it.
I think that's it.
But not Gertrude.
I'm not actually Gertrude.
So you're just filling in for Gertrude.
I'm filling in for her today.
So that sort of is five roles.
Yes.
Anybody else here double cast? I mean, multiply
yeah.
cast?
All
both narrators.
Are.
Oh, everybody is doing things. Mm-hmm. So how big is the school? I mean, how many students at Oakwood High School?
It's about just over 300.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What are you doing to recruit new drama thespians? Thespians, thank you.
Yeah.
Thespians.
I know. I just got asked. They're like, the assistant director to all of it. I call her Kayford. She came up to me. She's like, she handed me a script. She's like, you want to do this? Read it. If you like it, you're in. I was like, oh.
Okay. I actually asked for a script, and she had me read it, and then she was like, I'll see you today at 3:30, and I was like, guess you'll see me today at 3:30.
So,
how I got here, well, Cassie mentioned drama club to me. I asked her, first my sister was in it, and then I'm assuming she dropped out. But then Cassie was like, oh, really, you should join for a lead role or something, and I said, okay. The first show that I have ever done was Lockdown, which I was a crying freshman. I didn't have any lines. I just stormed out of the room and made everybody spaz. That's all I really had. And this is my very first time me having a lead role.
Congratulations.
It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And Lacey?
Actually, I went to see a show last year. No, 2 years ago. No, it was last year. And it was Harvey. And I thought they did, like, really good. Like, I literally thought they were, like, professional. So I wanted to go and try and be a techie and maybe work my way up to being an actor, but I actually ended up being an actor and really liked it.
Well, I guess if it's such a small club, then you're going to do all of those things. So you probably do tech work as well?
Yeah.
We
on the show?
We used to have a lot of techies, but they all dropped out for some odd reason.
Well, if you're doing shows like Hamlet, Thrillmageddon, I don't know why people wouldn't want to be jumping
so
in. I mean, after all, it says here, come out for a night of theater, fun, and laughter. You can't have much more than that.
Oh, you're going to laugh.
Especially if you can get extra credit, I gather, from at least some teachers for attending the play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some are very generous, like 20 extra credit points.
20 to 30. Somebody with 100.
Yeah. No, that was Miss Morris. They, like, scribbled out the board
and
put 100 down.
Well, I don't know that general audience members get extra credit, but you can certainly have a good time. It's the Oakwood High School Drama Department. Hamlet Thrillmageddon at Oakwood High School in the cafeteria tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. 7 o'clock performances each. Tickets quite inexpensive. And if you are involved, if you are a student in the school, you could get extra credit for it. Brianna Whittem is the director and also a special education teacher at the school. And we've had this scene with Cassie Jenkins, Brianna Hargrove, Beth Wombles, Kendra Kinzer, and Lacey Clark, and I wish you all the best with this particular production, and I'm getting mixed up in how you say certain words, and thanks for coming on over, and I guess we got to get you back for class.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you very much.
My pleasure to have you on. Stay tuned next for a conversation with Adam Neiman, who is a solo pianist with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, for concerts in Bloomington and Springfield this weekend. Support for today's broadcast comes from Speaking of product placements, Radio Maria in downtown Champaign, along with their dinner menu, tapas is served every evening until 2 a.m. Brunch also served on Saturday and Sunday from 10:30 to 2:30. Information on menus, wine, and beer lists is at RadioMariaRestaurant.com. You just heard some of the Ondine of Maurice Ravel from his Gaspar de la Nuit, which means water nymphs. And the performance was from 1993, the Stravinsky Awards International Piano Competition, which at the time was held every other year at the University of Illinois. And WILL broadcast that concert. The person who played was the 14-year-old winner of the 15 and 16-year-old division of the awards that year, and he was also one of the two Pogorelich Grand Prize winners, his name Adam Neiman. And as it happens, Adam is back in our community, for concerts this weekend by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, actually in Bloomington Friday and then in Springfield on Saturday night. And he's with me on the phone right now. Adam, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
How well do you remember that competition from when you were 14 years old?
I remember it very well because that competition was one of the most important steps in my early career, and it led to a lot of things. I was privileged to play at the Pogorelich Festival in Germany as a result of that competition, and a lot of things sort of came from that, and it was an important stage also for me. It was probably the largest scale competition I'd ever entered up to that point, so there was a lot of pressure, and there was obviously a lot of relief and excitement at doing well in it.
Do you remember at all how many kids came to participate in the competition? I really have no idea.
I don't remember exactly, but I do remember it was a lot. I would guess probably close to 100 kids were there. And
wow.
There was a pre-selection process of tapes at the time, so those 100 or so kids were already the cream of the crop. It was a pretty amazing group of people.
And they came from literally all over the world, I gather, mostly from the States, but as well. You know, there were award winners from China and I forget which other countries.
Yeah, I remember there were a few Russians and there was a kid from Vienna. And yeah, there were kids from all over the place there.
What do you remember about the process and about, do you remember anything about how you felt at the time?
Well, nervous, really nervous at the time. I was just, you know, I think that at the time I was very, very focused. So I was working 10 hours a day at least. And I didn't really pay too much attention to what was going on around me simply because I was in the practice room all the time. My mother was with me and she's always been a great help to me. And she was kind of my practice coach and friend. So she was the one, while I was practicing during the competition, she was the one actually listening to all the other competitors and making notes, and mostly making notes of things that were to my advantage, like noting the acoustics of the hall, saying, well, the bass register of the piano doesn't play well on such and such notes, or the treble register comes out really brightly on these few notes, so when you get to those notes, you might want to be careful not to overdo it. Things like that, because she could hear other competitors, because I was somewhere in the middle of my round, so I had that advantage, and that was a great help to me.
Well, you obviously proved to be an excellent team back in 1993, and it just occurred to me, the other coincidence of your coming back here with the Illinois Symphony, you played Ravel on that awards concert, and you're playing Ravel in Bloomington and Springfield, the piano
concert. It's an
amazing
coincidence. Yeah.
So talk,
well,
yeah.
I love Ravel. I always have. And I remember wanting to play Ravel desperately when I was a small kid and not being able to, of course, because at the time it was technically beyond me. Ondine from the Gaspard de la Nuit was one of my first attempts at playing Ravel. And actually, I got to play the whole cycle, the Gaspard de la Nuit, in Germany for Pogorelich at that festival. And that, of course, is one of Pogorelich's great pieces. That's one of his war horses. So that was kind of an amazing experience to be able to play it in front of him. But I remember that was a fulfillment of a dream that had been with me my whole life up to that point. And since then, I've played a lot of Ravel. The concerto is actually a fairly recent acquisition for me. I just never really got around to doing it until the last several years. So it's really fresh.
And it is an absolutely pleasurable piece to play. Very, very rewarding for both orchestra and soloists.
Well, when you say, you mean usually from a listener's point of view, I mean, they, of course, can enjoy a piece, but then especially appreciate fiendish difficulties of this piece or this concerto or that concerto. So I'm glad you used the term pleasurable. What makes it so in the case of this particular concerto?
Well, first of all, the language of it, it's full of jazz. It was written after Ravel's exposure to Gershwin, and he was so taken with the language of American jazz that he infused this entire concerto with that language. So there is a very American element to the piece, which is nice for an American soloist like myself and for an American orchestra like the Illinois Symphony. And I think listeners enjoy it. It's kind of a blend, really. You have this impressionistic timbre that Ravel is so famous for with, you know, beautiful textures and melodies that are very subtly integrated into a lot of orchestral and piano color with many instruments and a beautiful effect. But at the same time, you have these really jaunty, exciting rhythms that only jazz could produce. And the combination is just delightful. And then the sheer perfection of the writing, between what's happening in the piano, which is totally rewarding for the pianist. Ravel was a great writer for the piano, and all of the orchestra being totally involved. It's not just one of those concertos where the soloist sort of leads the way and pulls the orchestra by the scruff of its neck along for the ride. It's really almost symphonic in nature, in that the piano and the orchestra are just part of a cohesive whole. And so there's a lot of piano solo stuff, there's a lot of orchestra solo stuff, and there's a lot of wonderful back and forth moments. But all of it takes place in the hands of a total master of the orchestra.
It sounds to me like a piece that would be a challenge to put together for piano and orchestra, especially given that usually the pianist or the soloist of whatever concerto comes towards the end of the rehearsal process. Is it difficult to assemble?
You know, in a way it isn't, because Ravel did his homework. I think music is often hard to play when the composer may have left things undone or perhaps left too many options available. And so you deal with such infinite range of choices that sometimes coming together with a conductor can be a challenge. And sometimes the ensemble and the rhythms are so complicated and occurring at the same time that counting and just staying with an even beat can even be a challenge. But with this piece, the writing is so clear. All his dynamic marks are perfect. If you do exactly what's on the page, it sounds good. The rhythms are complicated and interesting, but they all line up in a very natural way that's instinctual. So as long as everybody's, you know, done their practicing and everybody's playing in tune and on time and just following what's on the page, the piece almost plays itself, which is just, it's just so wonderful to play a piece where the composer has that kind of mastery.
You said that it was influenced by jazz and has jazz through it. Do you have any jazz background yourself, and does it matter?
I don't have jazz background. Of course, I love jazz. As far as whether it matters, I don't think it does in the case of this piece. I would not presume to play jazz, because I do think that true jazz, which is largely an improvisational art form, it's better left to the masters of jazz. My mastery is in the classical language. Ravel writes this in a jazzy way, but it's still Ravel. It's still very much a classical piece. It's structured. It's tight. It has moments that seem improvisatory in the way that jazz can, and yet all that is taken care of by the composer for us. If this were truly a jazz piece, you know, there would just be a lot of areas where the composer would say, okay, now riff and go off on your own. I wouldn't be comfortable with that. But as far as all the rhythms and the harmonies and the language of it, I feel comfortable because, you know, it's a kind of a hybrid.
I think that I've heard, because I actually conducted it once with a jazz pianist doing the Gershwin Rhapsody in Blue, and it's been recorded by jazz pianists, but I don't think I've ever heard anyway or heard of a jazz pianist attempting this piece, meaning the Ravel.
I think they could do it, and it would probably be very interesting. I've heard the Rhapsody in Blue played by jazz pianists, and it always ends up being a very interesting, inspirational experience, very different from how a classical musician approaches a piece. Because, of course, we're always approaching it from the recreative standpoint of how do I interpret these markings, and we have this attitude of trying to be as faithful as we can to the score, and I think that jazz musicians tend to be much more liberal about that, and they tend to use the score as more of a diving board, and then they make that high dive and go off on their own. And often the result is quite compelling.
You have some recordings out. Since we heard a portion of the Ravel played by somebody else, it's only reasonable we should actually let you play for a little bit. You have some recordings out of music of Anton Arensky. One of them is chamber music, I think, and then one is solo piano. Mm-hmm. And I thought we'd maybe play, your choice here, either Etude in F sharp or a Scherzo by Arensky. These are obviously have nothing to do with jazz. This is music that is written out. Solo piano in a long tradition that pretty clearly, in Arensky's case, comes from Chopin, it seems to me, when listening to it.
Oh, yes.
And I wonder how you discovered Arensky's music for yourself, because it's not something that the average pianist plays, I don't think.
It's true. Well, I had the experience of playing both his piano trios, which one of which is quite well known in the chamber music circles. And I was taken with it. It's just so beautiful, the melodies, that Russian melancholy blended with that Chopinesque, as you say, Chopinesque style of writing. And it got me interested. And then I was dealing with Naxos at the time, which is a recording label that we made the recording on. And they said to me, you know, you really do have free rein. You can choose
any repertoire you like that we haven't recorded. Of course, if you really look at Naxos's database, they've recorded practically everything ever written, yeah. It seems. Didn't leave me with a lot of choices, but I noticed that nobody ever recorded on Naxos. Nobody ever recorded the solo piano music of Arensky. So thought I would take a good look, and I actually, it was difficult to get the music. Not a lot, it's published, but not a lot of it is available easily, because there's just hardly any demand for it. So I went through this website of rare piano scores, and they had everything Arensky ever wrote, and I bought it, and I went through, I just sifted through all of his music, and realized that almost without exception, I found every piece to be a gem, really, really beautiful. And I thought, why aren't we playing this stuff? So I proposed doing an album of solo piano music. He wrote only miniatures. He didn't write any large-scale pieces like sonatas or, you know, nothing that lasts more than 8 to 9 minutes at the most. But I thought it would be a great thing to do.
Well, I mean, you actually echoed the sentiment I had when I was listening to some of this, because I thought, too, you know, this is just gorgeous stuff. I mean, if people like Chopin, why not play Arensky? You know, why not learn Arensky? And then,
yeah.
You know, you can play a familiar Chopin, and then you can throw in something else that people will love and learn something a little new, whether you're the pianist or whether you're in the audience.
Absolutely. I definitely love to be an advocate for good music, and I love when I can discover someone who's a bit of an unsung hero, because it just gives me pleasure to dig up their stuff and show it to people and say, you know, maybe through politics or the writing of history, this person got buried under piles of other composers, but this person is totally worthwhile.
What do you have a preference here, Etude or Scherzo? What's it going to be?
Let's go with the Scherzo. I think that's a pretty interesting piece.
Okay, this is a Scherzo, Opus 53, number 2 by Anton Arensky, performed by Adam Neiman, who is going to be performing music of Ravel with the Illinois Symphony in concert Friday night at 8 at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, and then again Saturday night at 8 at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield. Adam Neiman, my guest here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Music by Anton Arensky, his Scherzo, Opus 53, number 2, played by Adam Neiman, my guest here on Live and Local, before he joins forces with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, and guest conductor Kenneth Raskin this weekend. Ken is one of the candidates to be the music director for the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, so this is his second time with the orchestra this season. I guess earlier he performed with the Illinois Chamber Orchestra. Now he's back with the symphony. Adam, you mentioned that you like to, that you feel yourself an advocate for good music, and not only exploring maybe composers like Arensky who've gotten lost in the midst of so many other composers whose names have come down to us more, you know, more frequently, maybe more prominently. But I gather from looking at some of your recorded output and other things I've seen you have done that you're also looking for contemporary composers whose music that you find some affinity with. And you've recorded a piece by Jennifer Higdon, her piano trio. How did you encounter this piece? She is a very current composer who's had some popularity around the country.
She's a fantastic composer. I came to this piano trio. It was commissioned for the Bravo Vale Valley Music Festival a few years back, and I was scheduled to perform during the summer festival. I was asked by Eugenia Zuckerman, who was running things at the time, if I would be interested in being part of the world premiere performance of it, because they commissioned the work, and I jumped. I said absolutely. I had heard Jennifer's Concerto for Orchestra, which achieved quite a bit of popularity all throughout the world, actually.
And I just thought it was a really exciting, great piece of music. So I was delighted to be a part of it. I definitely advocate for new music. Of course, you know, new music, like any other field, is going to have range of quality, and this is just something of the human condition. It's very hard to judge things without the 2020 vision of hindsight, you know. So I try to get involved in as many contemporary projects as I can within the realm of my capabilities and my time schedule and all that. And, you know, I'm sure that a certain amount of it will be music that will probably survive and have posterity. I think that the Jennifer Higdon Piano Trio is one of those pieces. It's a really great work.
I'm actually forgetting, because I didn't write it down, what the first movement is called. We're going to hear a little bit of the second movement, which has a very funky title, Fiery Red. What was the first movement called, and where do these titles come from?
Gosh, you know, I'm now embarrassed to say that I forgot the title.
You don't remember
it. I think it was something to do with blue. It was
a color, calmer. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a much calmer movement. It's a two-movement trio, so the first movement is this beautiful sort of crystalline, slower piece, and then this crazy, energetic, volcanic second movement.
Well, maybe volcanic is the answer, fiery red, because it certainly seems to be appropriate.
Yeah, and I was lucky to play with superb colleagues, Elisa Weilerstein on the cello and Anna Kiko Myers on the violin, just two total knockout performers, and we worked really well together.
Here they are with pianist Adam Niemann, music by Jennifer Higdon on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That's music of Jennifer Higdon. It's the second movement of her two-movement piano trio, this movement called Fiery Red. And violinist Anna Kiko Myers, cellist Elisa Weilerstein, and my guests here on Live and Local, pianist Adam Niemann, performed there. Adam will be with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra for concerts this weekend. Adam, I noticed in reading your biography that you've been involved in some television documentaries, specifically for PBS, and I wondered how you got involved in those things. That's not the norm.
Yeah, I've been very lucky with that. I know a film director named Josh Aronson, who's a well-known documentarian. And back when I was just coming out of my teens, starting my early 20s, he decided to focus on me alongside a violinist, a young violinist, for the subject of this documentary for PBS that he did called Playing for Real. And It was just a great opportunity. It was a documentary that focused on young artists
breaking into the field of performance, concert performance. And so it took a look at this 14-year-old violinist who was just beginning her path. And then I was just coming out of this organization called Young Concert Artists, which is a non-for-profit management that helps begin the careers of young artists. And I was just moving into the more commercial world of commercial management and larger scale concerts. So it was an interesting documentary. And it's actually through Josh Aronson that I got to know Helen Whitney, for whom I wrote music for her recent documentary on the subject of forgiveness, which was on PBS, because I'm also a composer. And so I had actually played one of my piano pieces in a concert, a house concert of all places. It's nothing high profile. And this woman, Helen Whitney, happened to be there, and she said, "I really want to use your piece in my movie." And I've heard stuff like that before. You know, you sort of think, okay, well, what are the odds of that actually happening? But then she really followed up with me, and then she made it clear that she actually needed a whole lot more music for her movie. And she's pretty honest. She's like, "Well, you're not really a film composer, so I don't know what your capabilities are, but would you like to try your hand at this? Because I need some music." And I was really happy to try, because it's always been my dream to write music for film. I love blending music with imagery, so having a moving image to be inspired by is great, and it worked out. She was a really great person to work for, and she used quite a bit of my music in her documentary. So it's kind of opened up maybe a new pathway in my career and my creative life.
So might we be seeing Adam Neiman nominated for an Oscar film score one of these days?
Wow. Well, you know, the odds of that are, as you know, stacked against me. But I would be delighted to be in that position. Let's put it that way.
So maybe work in that direction at least at some point.
Yes.
You know, the other thing I was curious about, you have a pretty good presence on YouTube, and I've mm-hmm. noticed that more and more classical musicians are doing that, some of them inadvertently because other people post their stuff. But you've got your own YouTube channel. You put this stuff up yourself and try to have it be a pretty professional looking and sounding. And I wonder how important that seems to you, and maybe from what you know of other performers, how much on the increase is this an important way for classical musicians to get their art known?
I think it's totally vital to the profession now. I think as the internet has become pretty much the dominant force in people's lives, or one of the dominant forces in people's lives, so has the internet as a means of communication. And for anyone in the arts, video material is so important. I think that people want to see, not just hear, and you know, watching a video is the next best thing to a live performance. Of course, nothing can ever quite match the vibe of a live performance, but it does come a little closer than just a plain audio recording. And what's so great about something like YouTube is that it's free. And so someone like Adam Neiman can take out a channel of his own, and if he's zealous enough, he can record all his concerts, which requires lugging camera equipment around, which I do. And just capturing. For me, it serves two purposes. One is the professional, just being able to get my stuff out there without having to rely on recording companies, which are increasingly tighter and tighter about what they release, and without having to pay for enormous distribution rights. But also from a personal point of view, I want to document my career for my own sake, because I've invested so much of my life since I was about 3 feet tall to developing these skills, and I want to have this for myself and maybe for my family, and just to capture. So capturing the footage is a pain to do, but I think in the long run it's really worth it. I see artists doing it more and more, and I think that it's an enterprising business tool.
Well, and somebody listening to us have this conversation now has the opportunity to, now that they know it exists, to go check out Adam Neiman on YouTube. And if they liked what you had to say and they liked the little bit of playing we've been able to let them hear, they can put the two together with the visual aspect and say, hey, wow, I'd really like to go see this guy with the Illinois Symphony this weekend. Adam Neiman will be there 8 o'clock on Friday at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, Saturday at the Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield, and he'll be playing the Piano Concerto in G of Maurice Ravel. We say the key because there's another one that he wrote for the left hand only. He's not doing that one. And Kenneth Raskin will be guest conducting the Illinois Symphony in these concerts. Adam, it's great to talk to you, and best of luck with whatever is the next phase of your career.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on your show. It's an honor and a delight.
And here's Adam Neiman from a live concert performance playing a Sergei Rachmaninoff's transcription for solo piano of Fritz Kreisler's Liebeslied. Thank you. Adam Neiman playing Fritz Kreisler as transcribed by Rachmaninoff here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Quick look at some other events you can see and hear live in our listening area. The New Orleans, that one actually happened already. The Young and the Fretless will be at the Krannert Center this evening at 5 o'clock playing old-time mountain music. It's the University of Illinois Jazz Combo led by coached by Glenn Wilson. That'll be at the Iron Post this evening at 5 o'clock, but followed by the UI Jazz Trombone Ensemble at 8 o'clock. Illinois State University Spring Dance Theater is at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts in Normal. That's tonight at 7:30. The Hathaways are at Bouvons in Urbana this evening at 6 o'clock. It's Tortoise and the Hare's Big Race, put on by Prairie Fire Theater at First Presbyterian Church in Normal this evening at 6 o'clock. Don't Ask play klezmer music at Heartland Gallery in Urbana tomorrow evening at 7. Illinois Symphony Orchestra, well, that's, of course, what we were just talking about. Champaign-Urbana Ballet presents Coppelia at the Virginia Theater tomorrow night at 7:30, and then two matinees on Saturday. Strings Attached are at Kickapoo Landing in Oakwood tomorrow evening at 5:30. In Your Ear Big Band is at the Cowboy Monkey in Champaign tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from these business partners: Risk Management Commodities of Lafayette, Indiana, Fertilizer Dealer Supply of Philo, Milo's in Urbana, and Escobar's in Champaign. These business partners join the Friends of WYLL in making great programs possible. We also have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine tastings on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday's tasting features 10 wines, followed from 7 to 9 p.m. by the smooth jazz guitar music of Lamont Parsons. This is 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. At 101, it's 83 degrees.